Money FM 89.3. Best of the evening runway.
The Washington Report.
Money FM 89.3. It is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. We're going to take a look at some key headlines out of the United States. Starting us off, the House of Representatives finally approving billions of dollars in the new U.S. military aid for Ukraine. All this to help combat Russia's invasion. It's a much delayed measure that had vocal opponents in Congress, and it took a fragile bipartisan deal to get the $61 billion U.S. dollar package through. Now, it is unclear when the aid will arrive, but reports suggest it could be within days. The package will now go to the Senate, and that's expected to pass before President Joe Biden signs it into law. More than one-third will go on to weapons to battle Russian forces. Will this help end the war, or will it perhaps prolong the fighting and create more bloodshed? That's one of the questions we'll ask. On the line with me is Emeritus Professor Joseph Camilleri, La Trobe University, Melbourne, and Fellow of the Academy of Social Sciences in Australia. Professor, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good to speak with you. I'm well. Thank you for asking. Although this news has got a lot of observers talking about it, $61 billion U.S. dollars in fresh aid for Ukraine passed over the weekend. A lot to unpack from Congress. First up, give us a better idea of these bills that were passed and what exactly is entailed with it.
Well, the administration, the Biden administration, has been pushing very strongly for some very considerable time for these bills to be passed. And as you know, for substantial aid, some a good deal of it military, but also some economic aid, primarily with Ukraine and Israel in mind. And as you also know, Trump and his supporters have strongly resisted it, but does seem from the vote in the House that enough Republicans have been willing to support the Democrats for the bill to be passed in the House, and maybe the same will happen again in the Senate. I don't think all Republicans will, but probably enough will to enable it to pass. Now, it's a Biden administration initiative. There are a few Democrats who themselves are rather anxious about it. And the reason for this is that a number of people across the political spectrum, from right to left, progressive and conservative, have their doubts. And what they're worried about, and this might also apply in the case of Israel, but certainly in the case of Ukraine, that it will, as you said in your introductory comments, prolong rather than shorten the war. Mm. And we have to ask, what is it that's been driving the Biden push, the Biden initiative? Yeah. And I think, basically, he's been strongly advised by key elements of the U.S. security establishment to push in this direction. And what is their thinking? Well, their thinking is that the more pressure you apply on Russia, the better. Yeah. The more you, if you like, pose serious costs on their military and their economy, and the more perhaps you can move towards greater dissent within Russia, the better it is for the United States. So that is the real driver. It has very little to do with what happens to the Ukrainian people or the Ukraine. That's a kind of wishful gloss that's put on it. But the reality is to cause maximum pain on the adversary. And the adversary is a Putin-led Russia. Now, this is, I think, tragic for the people of Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you know why that is? Because they're not going to win, no matter how many weapons they get. Because with every weapon that the Ukrainians might get, the Russians will somehow be able to respond in kind. They will drive up their production machine. They will get more support from countries that have been supportive so far in one way or another, be it China, be it North Korea, be it Iran, be it some others. Right. And so the question you have, one has to ask, will it just prolong a stalemate, or will it shorten it? And there is no way that this will shorten the stalemate. Mm. It will just prolong it. And the cost will be mainly incurred by the Ukrainians, and less of the cost will be borne by Russia. It's a counterproductive strategy, as I see it.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even dive into the social and emotional costs that will be borne by Ukraine. I do wonder, just on the back of your answer there, Professor, is the current President Joe Biden racing against time? Is the Senate racing against time, considering everyone in some way or another is preparing for a potential second term of President Donald Trump?
Yes. Well, that is probably an important part of the thinking of these key influential elements in America's security elite. They know that under Trump, there will be much less interest in pushing forward with these arrangements. Mm. And they're hoping that if the legislation gets through both houses of Congress, and with the Biden then signing off, that will somehow tie the hands of a possible Trump presidency. That's the thinking. Yeah. Whether it would work out that way, whether in fact Trump, who may oppose this particular policy, should he become president, would be prevented from cancelling it or substantially changing it, that's a moot point. But they see it as helping to tie his hands should he come to assume the presidency.
Where does aid or funding for Israel and Taiwan come into play here? I understand the aid, of course, is combined with funding for Israel and Taiwan, but sort of managing priorities sounds a little tricky right now.
It is tricky, very tricky, and both are tricky, but in different ways.
Okay.
In the case of Taiwan, that can only heighten tensions between China and the U.S., and therefore you have a situation in which the U.S., on the one hand, is in a much tenser relationship with the other two major powers in the world, the Russia on the one hand and China on the other. So that's got its considerations. And of course, the fact is that the Strait of Taiwan remains anything could happen at a given moment through miscalculation or accident, let alone deliberate policy. So there are problems there. In the case of Israel, of course, it's different. Mm. It's different because the catch there is America's relationship with Israel on the one hand and with Iran and the Arab world on the other.
Right.
And by siding so dramatically with Israel, increased aid, military and economic, at this critical juncture when Gaza is in ruins and the fighting still goes on and no ceasefire yet in sight, what the repercussions of that will be, well, we'll have to wait and see, but I suspect they will not endear the U.S. To much of the Arab world, and certainly not to Iran and its proxy friends in different parts of the Middle East.
Yeah, eggshells everywhere, some more fragile than others as they will try to walk on these issues. Professor, I'd like to talk about another one that came up in Congress, the plan to ban TikTok. There is likely to be a vote as soon as Tuesday. Lawmakers advanced a similar bill last month. Efforts appear to be quite different. It's attached to a sweeping foreign aid bill. Lawmakers trying to, I mean, it's tying TikTok to foreign aid. This sounds weird. I do wonder where the question of what TikTok has brought to the American economy in terms of content creation, how this, you know, 3-4 years ago was a $50 million economy. It's grown by so much. Why ban it? Or is it a case of sell it to someone within the United States so they have some form of control? Your thoughts?
Well, I suspect, you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that very few of us know about as yet, though some of this may well come out in the open in the weeks and months ahead. But I suspect, and there's a little bit of evidence to suggest this, two things are happening. There are those in the security establishment, we've already spoken about them, who are gung-ho on putting maximum pressure on China and Russia, but in this case the target is China. And they want to have this narrative of China posing a major security threat through various forms of infiltration, through surveillance, etc., through the illegitimate interference in America's internal affairs. So there's that push, which is part of the same scenario we've spoken about. And then there is powerful economic interests, and in particular the social media giants, who are applying enormous pressure for the sale to be pushed forward, because they would stand to gain a great deal if they were able to replace what TikTok is currently able to do as a Chinese economic outfit. And you may be interested to know the social media lobbying in the United States amounted to just short of $20 million in 2023. So you can just imagine, and employing close to 70 different lobbyists.
Yes. Yes.
That gives you something of the enormous power and influence they wield. So I think this this combination of factors has probably influenced this proposed ban. And how it'll all pan out, well, I think we'll have to wait and see.
Professor, am I going too far? I mean, obviously, there are obvious security issues, privacy and all that, that important stuff that need to come into play. We've seen other nations try to deal with it. But am I going too far to say that using it's a case of like kind of weaponizing national security, kind of weaponizing this antitrust agenda? Am I going too far to suggest that?
Yeah, there is. Well, I mean, it's been happening now for some time with a little bit of that on the other side too. Economic relations, trade, investment have, as relations have deteriorated between the US on the one hand and China and Russia on the other, normal economic transactions have become increasingly weaponized. Right. And it's interesting, I think there is an argument for government, for in the interests of the public, being much stricter about what social media should and should not do.
Yeah.
But I think the criterion there is not so much security, but misinformation, the distortion of information, and the drive towards extremist views and polarization. These are real problems which social media pose, but it's not unique to TikTok, the others too. And it's unfortunate that we're not seeing legislation on those issues, which are to do with the public social and cultural interest, but rather with those where the emphasis appears overwhelmingly to be, at least in the rhetoric, on security and not enough on the public interest in these other areas.
Just a final quick point to talk about, Professor, and this is Secretary of State Anthony Blinken set to travel to China this coming week. I guess it's all about strengthening U.S.-China relationships, getting that back on course. Your thoughts on the signal it sends, considering this is Anthony Blinken's second trip to the country as one of the top U.S. diplomats?
Yes. Well, this is a very complex relationship, as we know. And the U.S. obviously is concerned that its former global primacy is now in danger with an emerging China, which is wielding much more influence than it used to. And therefore, it wants to use every lever at its disposal to keep that emerging Chinese influence prevented from rising too fast. On the other hand, it is worried about the possibility of an all-out conflict should that continue to be the case. And so it has this very delicate dilemma to deal with, how to pursue a strong line against China's rise and yet to find ways of maintaining communication in the hope of preventing an outright conflict, which would be disastrous for both sides. And I think the Blinken visit is to try and see whether what can be done along those lines. Whether he'll have much success, we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you so much for your insights this afternoon. I've been speaking with Emeritus Professor Joseph Camilleri, La Trobe University, Melbourne, and Fellow of the Academy of Social Sciences in Australia. Thank you, Professor. Have a great week ahead.
You too, and all your listeners.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.